Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, June 16th. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Brian Lehrer, who is off this week. He'll be back next week. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects gay and transgendered workers from workplace discrimination, despite the fact that the Trump administration has stacked the court with conservative appointees. Even more surprising, Republican appointee Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote the majority opinion. Joining me now to talk about yesterday's landmark decision is Gabriel Arklis, senior staff attorney with the ACLU's LGBT and HIV project. Gabriel was also part of the team on the Amy Stevens case, which was part of yesterday's ruling. Welcome to WNYC, Gabriel.
Thank you for having me.
Gabriel, the court considered two cases concerning gay rights, and one was concerning transgender rights. The latter was Amy Stevens' case, which you worked on. Can you talk us through the complaint?
Yes. So Amy Stevens she died just last month. Amy Stevens was a transgender woman who worked as a funeral director. That was her career for decades. And according to all accounts, even her employer, she was excellent at her job. And then she told her employer that she was a transgender woman and that she needed to come back to work as who she truly was, Amy Australia Stevens. And her employer fired her and said that that it was not going to work out. And so she sued for discrimination on the basis of sex. And that's what the Supreme Court just said happened to her.
And what about the other two cases, Bostock versus Clayton and Altitude Express versus Zarda? What happened there?
In those situations, Gerald Bostock and Don Zarda, both gay men, were fired by their employers after they came out as gay.
So two of the court's Republican appointees, Neil Gorsuch and John Roberts, joined the court's Democratic appointees to deliver this 6-3 ruling in favor of expanding anti-discrimination protections. Were you surprised at the position that that Justices Gorsuch and Roberts took?
Well, I was thrilled. Honestly, after the argument in October, I thought that we might have Gorsuch's vote. Certainly, our arguments should appeal to conservative justices who care about the plain text of statutes. Our whole argument is there's no way that you can discriminate because of somebody being transgender or somebody being gay, lesbian, or bisexual without discriminating because of sex. And Justice Gorsuch really understood that argument. I'll admit that I was a little bit surprised that we got Justice Roberts' vote, but thrilled. I'm truly thrilled that this is a 6-3 decision and such a resounding victory for our communities.
As you were saying, Justice Gorsuch wrote, quote, "Those who adopted the Civil Rights Act might not have anticipated their work would lead to this particular result. Likely they weren't thinking about many of the act's consequences that have become apparent over the years, including its prohibition against discrimination on the basis of motherhood or its ban on the sexual harassment of male employees. Can you talk about those last two points of discrimination and why they were important in yesterday's ruling?"
Yes. So over the years, the Supreme Court has insisted that when Congress said you can't discriminate against employees because of sex, that means you can't discriminate against employees because of sex in any way. So in the past, employers have said that discriminating against women with young children doesn't count as discrimination because of sex if they hire a lot of women overall. In the past, employers have argued that sexual harassment against a male employee is not something that people in 1964 probably anticipated that the statute meant. But the Supreme Court has said what matters is what Congress actually wrote. And what Congress wrote is you can't discriminate against anyone, any individual, because of sex. You can't discriminate against them because they're a woman with children. You can't discriminate against them because they're a man, or you can't discriminate against them because they're a woman who doesn't match feminine gender stereotypes. And that same principle applies here. You can't discriminate against somebody because they're a man who's attracted to other men. You can't discriminate against someone because she was assigned male at birth and identifies as a woman. All of those things are discrimination because of sex, and none of them are permitted under federal law.
Gabriel, you mentioned earlier that Amy Stevens, the plaintiff in this case, died just about a month ago. I just want to ask if you want to take a moment to remember her and pay her a little tribute.
Thank you. Amy was truly an incredible leader for our community, and she's very much missed. I remember that on the eve of the argument, she was telling me a little bit about how much it meant to her to be a funeral director. And she told me about a night when a woman had lost her son and wanted to just sit there and be with her son's body. And Amy stayed up with her all night long into the next day, just holding space for her and helping her with her grief. For her, this was truly a calling. It was what she believed she was meant to do, to help other people and serve them throughout her life. And to lose the opportunity to do that because of discrimination was truly devastating for her, even beyond the financial losses. But she worked so hard and so long and so tirelessly for our communities. And I know that many of us are very grateful to her and to her wife, Donna, who really has been a huge part of this case from the beginning and is now carrying it on in Amy's name.
Gabriel, thank you so much for that. I want to bring in our listeners. Let's go to Tanya in Riverdale. Tanya, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. And I want to congratulate Gabriel and the ACLU for this case. I actually was a legislative director at NGLTF in 1994, part of the team that introduced the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And so this ruling really is a culmination of so many efforts. We actually held the first field hearings in New York City on employment discrimination in 1994, and in the Senate, we had plaintiffs from around the country discussing what happened to them. For example, Ernest Dillon, who was beaten unconsciously in a postal facility in Detroit, was a witness before the Senate Committee on Labor. I myself have been discriminated against, firstly in the military, but secondly, when I worked on Capitol Hill, I basically had to leave my job because I knew I was going to go through a background check and for that job and in terms of security clearance, and I knew that it would come out that I was gay. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people take themselves out of positions because for fear of being exposed, it could lead to further ramifications. So this ruling is really remarkable.
Tanya, thank you so much for calling WNYC. I want to get into some more of the specifics of the decision. You touched on this a little bit already, but Justice Gorsuch is a self-proclaimed devotee of textualism, which is often the literal interpretation of the law. I'm wondering, how did that factor into the decision yesterday?
Well, certainly it was a very textualist decision. Justice Gorsuch said, well, all right, let's look at what discrimination means. Let's look at what because of means. Let's look at what sex means. And actually, what sex means ended up being the least important part of it. We argued that, well, of course, sex means more than just what sex you were assigned at birth. Even if that were all that sex meant, this is still discrimination because of sex. You're always taking that into account when you're discriminating against somebody for being transgender. And that's really what Justice Gorsuch said. He said, whichever way you slice it, this is discrimination because of sex. And he concluded really without any hedging or or holding back in any way, an employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender defies the law.
It's so interesting to consider that both Justice Gorsuch and Justice Brett Kavanaugh are Trump appointees, and they fell onto very different sides during this argument. Can you talk a little bit about Justice Kavanaugh's dissent?
Justice Kavanaugh, obviously, we did not convince. And I think that shows that, really what I think at the end of the day this case was about for the conservative justices was, do they actually have a commitment to the text of the statute and to upholding the text of the statute? Or are they going to allow bias and their inability to see the humanity of LGBTQ people hold them back from staying faithful to the text of the statute? And I think that's really the divide between Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Gorsuch was going to say, look, whatever I think about the policy, it doesn't really matter. This is what the law says. And Justice Kavanaugh said, that can't be what it actually means.
It's interesting, though, when you consider, according to a SCOTUS poll survey that was cited in the Times just yesterday, the majority of Americans, 83%, think it should be illegal for employees to be fired based on sexual orientation. 79% of all respondents and 69% of Republican respondents also think it should be illegal for employees to be fired for being transgender. Is yesterday's ruling an example of the law catching up with the culture?
I think that's absolutely true. I think that there's huge support across the United States that we should not be fired from our jobs just because of who we are. And I think that, you know, that type of public support, that type of culture change really does have an influence on the court. And we've heard a little bit, you know, we've had callers from the task force and from SAGE, and we've heard a little bit about our legacies when, like Stonewall 51 years ago, black and brown trans women, drag queens, and butch lesbians rising up against police violence. I mean, so many people have contributed to this victory over the decades. So many people have worked so hard and so long to make this a reality.
Well, interesting that you mentioned Stonewall. I mean, this ruling comes 51 years to the month after the Stonewall Uprising, which is, our listeners most likely know, helped to catalyze the LGBTQ movement. In terms of the gains that have been made in those decades, like when the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage in 2015, where does this victory land? How significant is it?
This is hugely significant. I mean, different people might have different views, but I think in many ways this is the most significant LGBT civil rights victory ever. Not to say that marriage isn't incredibly important. And also, I would say Lawrence v. Texas is hugely important, which said we can't be criminalized for same-sex intimacy. That's huge. And Farmer v. Brennan, where a trans woman tried to seek redress for being, you know, set up to get raped in prison. Those are hugely important cases, too. But this case is the first case to address LGBTQ rights and trans rights, and to say that anywhere that discrimination on the basis of sex is prohibited, that means that discrimination against us is prohibited. This case was specifically about workplace discrimination, but discrimination because of sex is prohibited in housing, in education, in credit, in healthcare, in all of those arenas. LGBT people are going to have a much easier time getting legal protections than we had before.
Gabriel, there were attempts at passing anti-discrimination protections through Congress, but multiple bills languished over the course of several years. Can you talk a little bit about the uphill battle this has been for advocates?
That's right. There have been, so people have been trying to get legal protections for LGBTQ people under federal law for a long time. And there have always been at least two paths to that. One was to get Congress to amend the law to explicitly say, yes, this means that you can't discriminate against LGBTQ people. And the other path was to bring lawsuits or go to the EEOC and say, look, it already says LGBTQ people are covered. And we started having real success in the courts, especially for trans people and more recently for LGBTQ people, really around 2000, so around 20 years ago. In terms of the legislative struggle, while we have had successes in a number of states, and the House recently passed the Equality Act, we have never gotten, we have obviously never gotten Congress to pass a comprehensive bill that would make sure that LGBTQ people are covered in all federal laws prohibiting non-discrimination. And actually, we still need that, which I want to make sure people understand. So the Equality Act doesn't just say that LGBT people are covered under Title VII, which is the employment discrimination law we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. It also closes a bunch of other gaps in federal law that affect a lot of people, not just LGBTQ people. For example, a lot of people don't know this, but while discrimination on the basis of sex is not allowed under federal law in the workplace or in housing or in healthcare, it is allowed in what's called public accommodations. And those are businesses that are open to the public, like, you know, restaurants, stores, hotels, movie theaters, those types of things. And that's something that we really need Congress to fix. The court can't do it. So the Equality Act will close gaps like that and make sure that we're not living in a world where, you know, a store couldn't fire somebody who worked there for being LGBTQ, but could say, we don't want to serve LGBTQ people here and not allow people to shop. So that bill is actually still really important.
Interesting. I want to invite Jeff from Manhattan on the line. Jeff, thanks for calling WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning. Hi, Gabrielle. This is Jeff for the G. I'm actually also a civil rights attorney, but I just wanted to comment on how incredibly momentous the decisions were from yesterday. I can't say, it's really astounding. You could knock me over with a feather reading the decision. And I also wanted to say that it really, in New York, you know, we have a lot of protections for LGBTQ people, but in states where they don't have those protections, it was really just the Wild West. And when I was in college, I remember going to the Midwest to work at a job and realizing when I got there that I had unknowingly signed up to work at a Christian employer and realizing they could fire me if they found out I was gay. And although they didn't, they did have some strange rules about what gay people were and were not allowed to say. And there were no protections for that then, but there are now.
What a different time. And thank you for sharing that story, Jeff. Let's go to Danny in Brooklyn. Danny, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks. Love the show. Thank you so much for your work and your contribution, Gabriel. Thank you so much for your work and your dedication. I'm a trans guy, and I grew up in Colorado, and obviously, the lack of legislation to support trans folks is, you know, it had a huge impact on my life and the way that I understood who I am and how I can fit into the world. I've been working in support groups, doing support groups for trans folks for the last few years, and it's just huge after hearing story after story about the economic impact of discrimination against our community. This can just really elevate a lot of people. So thank you so much. And Gabriel, I'm curious if you can just speak to what we can do to keep the momentum going and particularly shine a light and focus on our Black and brown trans sisters that are still just being policed in such aggressive and horrible ways. And yeah, if you have any feedback on what we can do to stay focused on the folks in our community that need our support, I'd appreciate it.
Danny, thanks so much. Gabriel, what do you make of Danny's question?
Thank you, Danny. That's a truly excellent question. I mean, this is a moment of such incredible both celebration and mourning. I mean, two of our clients didn't live to see their rights vindicated in court, and trans communities, especially Black trans communities, are mourning the deaths of Rhea, of Dominique, of Laylene, of Tony, of so many people who have lost their lives. I think that the most important thing that we all need to do to show up for Black trans people is to follow Black trans leadership. I mean, there is incredible work that is going on that Black trans people are leading and that they have been asking for support on for many, many years. Support in terms of funding, support in terms of showing up at protests in ways that respect Black trans leadership, support in terms of making sure that things like decriminalizing sex work are high on our agenda. So I think there's actually a ton of things that we can do and that we need to do. And definitely, this is an incredible victory for us to celebrate, and that in many ways is due to the work of Black trans people over the years, and we still have so much further to go.
Gabriel, thank you so much for that. I want to bring Joe from Greenwich Village onto the line. Joe, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. I wanted to ask your guest how this decision might implicate firings that happen in religious institutions for trans and gay identifying people. Because I know there's like a ministerial exception. Will that still exist with this ruling?
Yes, there is a ministerial exception, but that is a pretty narrow exception. So what that means is, if your position is to actually be a minister or to do religious instruction, carry out religious functions, then it is permitted for your employer to discriminate against you on the basis of their religious beliefs. But anything beyond that, even if you're working for a religious employer, Title VII should still apply, which means it's still illegal for them to discriminate against you. But definitely, our opponents have been pushing very hard on expanding sort of religious exemptions to anti-discrimination laws, and that's something we need to be very vigilant against.
Joe, thank you so much for calling. Gabriel, I want to follow up. We had another caller with a question that's sort of in this vein about the extent to which this ruling affects the Trump administration's position on the military. Do you know how, if this ruling impacts that as well?
Yes. So Title VII, the law against employment discrimination, does not apply to service members. It applies to civilian employees of the Department of Defense. But this ruling will not directly help service members who are being discriminated against in the military. I do think that the reasoning in the decision will be very helpful in those cases as well. Those cases are brought based on the Constitution. And the Constitution also says people are entitled to equal protection of the laws, and anything that discriminates on the basis of sex has to be justified with what the courts have said has to be an exceedingly persuasive reason. So the reasoning here is going to help us make sure that that at least the government has to do a lot to try to justify its reason for trying to keep us out of the military. So to sum up, it's not going to directly resolve those cases, but I do think that this decision will help with those cases about the trans military ban.
As we come to a close here, Gabriel, you identify yourself in your Twitter profile as a, quote, mad trans Muslim. So I'm guessing this is also pretty personal for you today. Do you want to take a moment to reflect on it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, as we've heard from so many of the callers, it's, I mean, I've certainly had experiences of discrimination. I think most of us in the trans communities have had experiences of discrimination. You know, I've had a doctor say that he wasn't comfortable testing me for strep throat because I was trans, right? So, and to have worked so hard and so long, you know, for our communities and just on this case with my colleagues, it's tremendous to stand here and to know that my work has, you know, in some way contributed to this outcome. Anyway, it's a truly beautiful moment. I was optimistic that we would win, but even I did not expect a win as resounding and as unequivocal as this win. We still have a long way to go, but it is truly a moment to celebrate.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today. Thank you, Gabriel Arklis, Senior Staff Attorney with the ACLU's LGBT and HIV Project. Gabriel was also part of the team on the Amy Stevens case, which was part of yesterday's ruling. Thank you for joining us, and happy Pride.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.